Welcome to the My Money Podcast, number 106, from helpmetosave.com. I'm Karen Bryan, the editor of the Help Me To Save website, where you'll find tips to help you save money, spend less, and enjoy life. In this edition of the My Money Podcast, I'll discuss four recent articles from the Help Me To Save website. They are The Rambling Direct Debit by the Halifax, Vodafone Misleading Customers During Sales Calls, Can You Make Money Doing Online Surveys, and Lodging a Missing Cashback Claim with topcashback.co.uk. So starting off with an article written by my husband, The Rambling Direct Debit by the Halifax. He's been with the Halifax for decades, and overall he's been pretty happy with their service. Now, There are quite a lot of tempting switching offers where you can get £150 from Clydesdale Bank if you switch to them, £125 from First Direct, but my husband hasn't been tempted, he's stuck with the Halifax. But the way a direct debit cancellation was treated made him wonder if sticking with the Halifax had been the best policy. Last year, he joined the Ramblers and paid his initial membership by direct debit, as most organisations want you to do, in the hope that you keep renewing it every year. Also, it's cheaper than having to send out reminder letters and everything. So, he agreed that the direct debit would be collected again a year later. However, the Ramblers organisation collected the next annual direct debit a month earlier than he thought they were going to, and their response when he contacted them made him decide to leave the club. At that time, the Ramblers told him that in order to have his fee returned to him, he'd have to contact the Halifax directly through the direct debit guarantee scheme. He did that, and the fee was eventually returned. And at the same time, he was told by the Halifax that direct debit had been cancelled. So he was rather surprised when a few days later, he received a letter from the Halifax confirming that the money had been returned, however, saying that he would have to contact them if he wanted the direct debit to be cancelled. So he contacted Halifax again and was told that the direct debit had already been cancelled. When he queried their letter, they couldn't explain it, but suggested that he go back to the Ramblers to have the direct debit cancelled at their end. That brought him right back to where he'd started, having come round a full circle without a clear result, as the Ramblers had initially told him to get it cancelled through his bank. This makes him wonder, can someone ever be absolutely certain that a direct debit has been cancelled, or might it come back to haunt them again a year later if it's an annual direct debit? He's not quite sure where this leaves him regards possible collection by the Ramblers by direct debit again next year, but you would think that the Halifax would have been able to sort this out for him. Well, not quite, it seems. Let's just wait and see if they try to take the direct debit next year, because he's not 100% convinced that it's actually been cancelled. So, not great from the Halifax, saying they've cancelled it on the phone, then sending out a letter, and then saying, well, they're not sure why they sent the letter, so they need to pull up their socks a bit. And, still on the topic of customer service, Vodafone also need to pull up their socks. In my opinion, they're misleading customers during sales calls. I recently received a call from Vodafone, with whom I have a monthly mobile phone contract. You know, the sort of call that starts off purporting to be asking you if you're happy with the service, but soon moves on to a sales pitch. During the call, the sales rep was trying to persuade me to upgrade my package to include a MiFi device. This is a little box. You put a SIM card into it, and then you use your data allowance to set up a personal Wi-Fi spot to which you can connect several devices. So if you're out and about, you could get your MiFi set up, and then you'd be able to connect to Wi-Fi, your laptop, your camera, your phone, whatever. Now, during the call, I did say that I wasn't interested in a MiFi device, as I could set up a personal Wi-Fi hotspot by tethering on my mobile phone. Now, I am familiar with MiFi devices. I used one in Belgium, provided by the host when I was on a press trip there for my travel blog. Now, the Vodafone sales rep told me that my data would go further using a MiFi device than by tethering. I didn't understand how this was possible, as surely they're both just methods of transmitting the data. Now, I later verified that data, you wouldn't get any more from it whether you used MiFi or tethering, through my son, who's a telecoms engineer, and he asked a couple of his colleagues, and they all said, no, the data would just do the same thing, whether you transmitted the signal from your mobile phone or through a MiFi device. Now, I knew that one advantage of a MiFi device is avoiding draining your mobile phone battery in order to transmit the Wi-Fi hotspot through tethering. However, the last thing I want when travelling is yet another device to have to carry around with me and remember to charge. So I did tell the sales rep that I didn't like the fact that Vodafone don't offer any packages with unlimited data, whereas Three Mobile offer an unlimited data package for use on your phone, but it does permit 4 gigabytes of tethering for £15 a month. Plus, with Three, you can use your UK package abroad free of charge in 16 countries through the Three Mobile Feel at Home scheme. The Vodafone sales rep responded by saying that Vodafone offered better mobile broadband than Three Mobile. Now, I've used both quite a lot in all sorts of different parts of the country, rural areas, small towns, cities, and they've been broadly similar. I've had issues with them both sometimes. On the whole, they've both been quite good. So quite honestly, Vodafone telling me this cock and bull story about how I should upgrade to a MiFi because I'd get more out of my data, and then rubbishing a competitor's offering, just is not good. So get your act cleaned up, Vodafone. Next, I looked into if you can make money doing online surveys. I thought that doing some online surveys might be a good way to earn some extra cash. So I signed up to Ipsos Mori's I Say Research Panel. I believe that I'd be able to complete the online surveys quickly, as I've previously worked as a market research interviewer. I also reckoned that being a female aged 55 plus who was working full time would mean that I'd fit the quota for a fair number of surveys. I know from my market research days that it was always the hardest people to find were young working people, 16 to 24, 16 to 34 year olds who worked full time, who were actually at home and willing to do the survey. And then at the other end of the spectrum, it was sometimes difficult in some areas to find people over 55 who were still working full time. So when there's an online survey, obviously they want to get a good demographic spread. So I would think that, you know, students, retired people, got the time, want a bit of extra money, the quotas for that demographic is going to fill up quickly, whereas for younger, older working people, it's going to be harder to get them to do surveys. Now, as I'm online for a few hours most days, I also thought that I would get the notification of the online surveys as soon as they became available. So if I got in quickly, I'd be more likely to be accepted rather than maybe 2 or 3 days after the survey had come online. Now, within the first week of signing up to ISA, I did receive a few emails informing me that a survey was available. However, I was only able to fully complete 2 surveys. One earned me 150 points and the other 25 points. One survey wouldn't land on my laptop. I spent at least 5 minutes answering questions on 2 of these possible surveys about internet usage and broadband phone providers before it was deemed I wasn't suitable for the survey. Now, if completing a survey which took 20 minutes could earn me 100 points, then surely spending at least 5 minutes on screening questions should earn 25 points, i.e. one quarter of the 100 points, instead of the measly 10 points I was allocated for doing the screening questions. You need to earn 1,380 points, strange number, in order to be eligible for a reward, which is either a paper or electronic £10 shopping voucher. I worked out that you'd need to spend almost 5 hours completing surveys in order to earn the 1,380 points required to earn a £10 shopping voucher, based on a 20-minute survey offering 100 points. This works out at around a measly £2 an hour. It could also take quite some time to be eligible for sufficient surveys to amass the required 1,380 points. My suspicion is that many people who try it out like me never reach the 1,380 points threshold, meaning that I, say, get an average of a few surveys completed per sign-up without the interview receiving any reward. I certainly can't recommend doing online surveys as a way to earn money from my limited experience, considering that the minimum wage for workers aged 21 plus in the UK is £6.50 an hour. However, you do have to factor in that you can do surveys at home with no costs such as transport or childcare. I assume that if you signed up with several research companies, responded quickly to survey alert emails, and were in a desirable age working status bracket, you might be able to earn between £50 to £100 a month. I say run an affiliate scheme where you can earn 100 points for each person referred who completes at least one survey. That sounds to me like a better way to earn points than completing surveys yourself, but then you'd need to write positively about ISAE on your website or blog if you wanted to get any readers to sign up. So that would be a personal choice if you were going to say, well, this is a good way to make money in order to cash in from affiliate sign-ups. And the final article I'll discuss is lodging a missing cashback claim with topcashback.co.uk. Now, I'm a big fan of Top Cashback. I do a lot of shopping through the links on their site and I've earned a few hundred pounds in cashback, but I am aware cashback is never guaranteed, so I only go for product or service that suits my need at the lowest possible price. If I can get cash back on it, fine, it's a nice bonus, but I'm not going to get something, buy something that's more expensive because it has a bigger cash back, because then if I don't get the cash back, I'm stuffed. So, 3 weeks prior to our trip in Chicago in autumn last year, I booked single trip travel insurance with Aviva through the link on Top Cashback. I selected their policy as it offered travel disruption cover, including ash cloud. The Aviva cover wasn't the cheapest, but with the Bardanbunga volcano on red alert, I thought it was worth paying a bit more to ensure that we wouldn't earn up out of pocket. As our flight time home would be with a non-EU airline leaving from a non-EU airport, that's with United Airlines flying out of Chicago, we would have been responsible for any additional costs incurred if our flight had been delayed. Whereas if you're flying from an EU airline and or with an EU airline, they have to look after you. But if it's non-EU, you're on your own. Now, Top Cashback were offering £9.45 cashback on a single trip policy, so I thought, fine, that will reduce the cost a bit. Now, I made a mistake with the dates when I was buying the insurance online. Silly mistake. Our return flight departed from Chicago on the 20th September, so I'd entered that as the end date of the policy. However, due to the time change between the US and the UK, our arrival back in the UK was actually on the morning of the 21st of September. I phoned Aviva to ask if they could please amend the policy. They told me that they couldn't do this online or on the phone. I'd have to cancel that policy and buy a new one for the correct date. So I did this. At that stage, the 9.45 was shown as pending in my topcashback.co.uk account. However, a few days later, the cashback was shown as declined. I reckoned that this was because I had cancelled the original policy. But I did think that the tracking system would have picked up that I had made another purchase. straight after the cancellation. A few weeks later, I finally got around to lodging a missing cashback claim with Top Cashback, adding a note to explain the issue. The following day, I received a message, which I'll read out. My claim is currently at the ready to submit status. Please could you be aware that we submit claims in batches every few weeks and you will receive a message informing you when yours has been sent. We will then have to wait for a response from the merchant, which may take 2 to 3 months, but we'll keep you informed of any updates. I thought that seemed an excessively long time for a dispute to be investigated and resolved. A few days later, I received an email from Top Cashback to say that my case had been forwarded to the merchant, Aviva Insurance. 3 months later, I received a message that the cashback on the Aviva Travel Insurance had been declined. There was no clear explanation of why this decision had been made. I've copied the message below, which lists several possible reasons. It said, you know, the merchant has taken the decision to decline your cashback. It could be that it's not eligible for commission, you've not met the qualifying terms, the merchant's not happy with the validity of your transaction. They didn't give me a specific reason, which is really what I was looking for. I was annoyed with the response, in that it took 3 months to investigate my claim and email me this generic response. I believe there was no good reason to decline the 945 cashback on my Aviva travel insurance purchase. Yes, I had cancelled, but surely the system can track a cancellation and then another purchase. Now, here are my tips to reduce the chance of declined cashback. You need to carefully read all the terms and conditions before buying the product or service, which I'm saying to do, but I hadn't done properly myself when I applied for the Cooperative Bank current account through Top Cashback. The cashback just didn't track, no idea why, but I couldn't submit a missing cashback claim as I hadn't adhered to the terms and conditions, which stated I had to take a note of the date and time of my account application and the quote confirmation number generated by the application. Now, from my experience in the Aviva Travel Insurance, even if you do everything properly, there's no guarantee you will get the cash back, but not sticking to the terms and conditions mean that you definitely won't get it. Now, another tip to reduce the chance of declined cash back is to double check that you have entered all the correct information when making the purchase. This reduces the risk of having to cancel the original purchase. You know, if I'd entered my dates of travel correctly on my original Aviva travel insurance claim, I think I would have received the 945 cash back, no problem. But, you know, it's very easy to make a mistake with maybe when you're doing insurance, you put in the wrong date or month at the policy has to start. I think that there should be some way in the system to recognise a genuine reason for cancellation of purchase, but it's probably a red flag for fraud, buying something, cancelling, buying something else. Maybe people are trying to do multiple purchases that they're not going to go through with in order to get the cash back. But that's not really a good enough reason to decline cash back for genuine customers. And another tip is to take a screenshot of the page on Top Cashback. Then you have a written record of what cashback was being offered. And when you do make your cashback claim, give as much information as possible, dates, etc., while you're lodging the missing cashback claim. So I do hope that this makes it less likely that you'll have cashback declined. It is annoying. I mean, 90-95% of transactions I've made through cashback have gone through no bother, but it is annoying, especially when they take so long and they don't even come up with a decent reason. But back to my initial advice on find the product and service that suits your need, not necessarily the cheapest, but at the lowest possible price. And if you can get cash back in addition, fine, but don't be swayed by high cash back because you can't be absolutely positive that you will receive it. So that's the end of this My Money podcast from helpmetosave.com. You can read all our articles on the website at www.helpmetosave.com. You can subscribe to the My Money podcast on iTunes. So thanks for listening, and do join us again soon. Goodbye.